forget, it ain't the first 48, bro. It's 60 minutes, bro.
That's all it's gonna be. Shout out to Zone 32.
Yes, sir. You come at the King, you best not miss.
You're now locked into the street. Zone 32. 32.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Zone 32 podcast. This is three of us again. My name is Jake. His name is Drew. His name is Will. Grant is still on the active roster, which is a surprise to me because the Ravens did recently bring in an outside linebacker that Mr. Drew over here has been clamoring for months?
Years.
Years? There you go. Years, that's acceptable.
Really, since he blew up, did the same thing. You know, since he blew up that Michigan guy in the backfield in the off-back bowl. So.
Yep. Well, that's fair, but he has finally come. Before we get into the preseason game, I'm like, you know what? We'll touch into Clowney now because I want to. Because Clowney's a Raven. He signed a one-year, $2.5 million deal that could be worth up to six if he meets certain incentives, like sacks and playing time and all that good stuff. So, Drew, how ecstatic are you that not only him, but Ronald Darby has been brought in as a reinforcement in the cornerback room to add a little depth to basically account for more injuries? Dad, I won't get into Marlon. But anyway, how are you feeling about Clowney being a Raven, man?
I mean, that was a great move. We've been clamoring for him, Grant and I, at least, for multiple years now.
Me too.
I know, yeah, and you too. I know we wanted him before he went to the Browns. When there was rumors that Houston was looking to move him, like I was interested in trading for him then too. So it's been, you know, one of those guys. He's kind of like the DeAndre Hopkins, you know, status where like I've been wanting him for a very long time, and it finally worked out. And honestly, like no money. Like I was stunned that he signed for that contract. You know, especially when Yannick went for 10 guaranteed and Justin Houston got, you know, 6.5 or 7 guaranteed. I was thinking, you know, that kind of must have priced us out of Clowney, but yeah, you know, he's here. And he's the kind of guy, you know, if you look at his incentives, I think it's like 1.75 mil if he plays all 17 games. And then I think it's another 1.75 mil if he gets 9 sacks. I don't know if my math checks out there, but yeah, I don't know if the sack numbers will be there. Basically, is what I'm trying to say is that I don't think he's going to be a, you know, stat sheet production guy, but just his presence on the defensive line and the fact that he's like such a disruptive force is really going to make Owe and Ajabo's life a lot easier. And he's going to kind of be that guy who can do the dirty work for you, you know, set the edge, just really create havoc and really open up opportunities for other guys to actually finish on sacks. So I think that that is, you know, an A-plus move from EDC. Again, I know we've harped on this all offseason, but anybody who still talks shit about him and says that he can't close and can't do this and can't do that, like, you've just been cooked every fucking step of the way this offseason. And, you know, even Darby was a good move too. In terms of, you know, people who are available on the market, you know, assuming Darby's knee is fine, which it must be because they brought him in, like, he was probably the best available corner. And I know Jake touched on it, but, you know, we did get the Marlon foot injury. And I don't want to say weird reporting around it, but it was kind of like, you know, just sort of came out of nowhere. And it was a lingering injury, and all of a sudden he's getting surgery on it, and he's going to miss, you know, a couple weeks. It's not clear if it's going to be, you know, he'll be back after, you know, week one practicing and playing, or is he going to miss 2 games, is he going to miss 4 games, whatever it is. Like, you clearly need more corner depth and you need experienced corners. And Ronald Darby has been a, you know, a professional corner. Like, he's been solid ever since he's joined the NFL. So I think you had two moves right there for me to see that really helped the team. And, you know, that's what championship caliber teams do, is you add veteran depth and they can kind of step up in those big spots. And that's exactly what we needed. So
I would have been happy with us signing Darby before Marlon went down. So I, you know, and Rocky Sin is back practicing and Mollett's back practicing. So our cornerback depth that people were freaking out about, you know, with the top dog out, obviously, you know, that's a, you know, it sets you back a little bit, but adding Clowney, I think that the answer was more veteran depth. That's Darby. And then really fortifying the pass rush. Like, so those two moves in combination, I think, do offset to a degree. Like, you want to talk about the 80-20 rule with the Ravens. It's like an 80% replacement for Marlon Humphrey is signing Darby and adding to the pass rush with a, you know, a proven player like that. So,
I think. And you're not going to replace Marlon. Like, it's just not going to happen.
No, yeah,
that kind of guy's not there. So this is the best route to do that is, like you said, is you fortify the pass rush and you bring in a competent veteran who's proven that, you know, he's not going to put up the flashy interception numbers. He's not going to be Marlon Humphrey. He's not going to be an all-pro caliber corner, but he'll get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, the first week, we're either playing Davis Mills or
They announced Stroud.
Or Stroud. And, you know, rookie quarterbacks do not have a great track record against the Ravens.
Yeah, so. And, you know, C.J. Stroud is the kind of guy who kind of gets flustered when there's pressure on him, so...
Yeah, so I think you know, Marlon would have been even better, but that's an optimal matchup for week one. And I am on the record as saying I think that the Texans, you know, have by the end of the season, I think they could sneaky make a run at that division. I think they're much, much better than people give them credit for, but they're very young, so I don't see that translating week one necessarily.
If everybody in the AFC South is, you know, if 9 or 10 wins the AFC South, then I could definitely see the Texans being in the mix for that.
Yeah. Well, I think people are giving the Jaguars way too much credit. I think the Jaguars are a prime candidate for regression this year because, you know, for some reason, I think, you know, they've certainly made some additions. I think last year people, the dog is like choking behind me. They made some good additions, but at the same time, I think they vastly overperformed last year. So
definitely. And they had an easy schedule last year because they were a bottom of the barrel team, you know, the year before. So they were playing a last place schedule and now they're not playing last place schedule anymore. So.
Right. So, and I've said this and you know this from day one before Trevor Lawrence was ever drafted. I think Trevor Lawrence is a middle of the pack quarterback in the NFL. And people were talking about him like, you know, he's a second tier from the top guy, and he's just not that guy. He's fine, but he's not.
You've compared him to Carson Wentz before, which I think is a good comparison because Carson Wentz, when he had a good supporting cast and was healthy, was played like an above average NFL quarterback, played like a borderline top 10 guy. And I think that's what Trevor Lawrence is going to end up being, is that he's a guy that'll be in that top 10 discussion. He's never really going to be like an MVP guy, right? But
I mean,
you know, he's a Kirk Cousins, Carson Wentz. You know, you put a good team around him, you give him a good defense, and you'll win games. But I don't know if he's ever going to be that guy.
Right. Well, and like Carson Wentz, people say, oh, well, he was, you know, if he didn't get hurt that in 2017, he would have been MVP, or he was an MVP candidate. And
he was on MVP trajectory. Yeah, that's
sure,
fair to say.
Exactly. But like also didn't Matt Ryan win an MVP?
Yeah. And also that 2016. Year when Carson Wentz went down, they still ended up winning the Super Bowl. So clearly they were a good team around him.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and you know, again, Matt Ryan's fine. Matt Ryan is not, there's a lot of, Matt Ryan's like Nickelback. Like people talk about him like he's like some terrible quarterback. No, he was good. He was certainly a top 10 quarterback, but I think like on average, if you average out his career, he's probably like for his generation, he's probably like somewhere in the 10 to 13 range, you know, like.
So what do you call his generation? Because I would say of the guys who are going to, you know, become Hall of Fame eligible in the near future, it's like him, Rivers, and Flacco. And I would put him, you know, I don't think any of those guys are surefire Hall of Famers. I would put him below Rivers for sure.
Well, so here's who's in his era. It's Aaron Rodgers, got drafted in 2005. Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, who else? Matthew Stafford, 2009, right?
2007, maybe. But he was a little sooner.
Maybe in 2008. But he's so any of those guys who were drafted from like 2003 to 2009 or so, I think, are in the same sort of like generation of QBs. They played a lot of games against each other.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I would put him in the mix for, you know, the top 10 of guys that were drafted in that era, but that's not really saying much. Not a ton of guys that, you know, there were 6, 7 guys that you just named that came from that era, and he's, you know, he's in that mix somewhere, but he's not like, he's not a surefire Hall of Famer, I guess is my point.
No, and I think, like, Joe Flacco, personally, I would put Joe Flacco ahead of him because he won a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP. So
he's got the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP, and Matt Ryan's got the regular season accolade. So I don't know. They're both, you know, I would say that you can make an argument for either one and not really
close.
Come off as stupid.
Right. They're close.
Yeah.
And no, I, nobody's, you know, making an argument for Joe Flacco being at the top of the list of guys from that era. It's just, we have a, an affinity for him as Ravens fans.
Yeah. Sadly, the guy at the top of the list from that era played for a shitty team in, you know, black and gold that plays in Pittsburgh, and he, you know, stay away from him in public bathrooms, but
I guess the conversation, the conversation would be between him and Rodgers.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say I would put him over Rodgers just because of the rings, but you know, it is, you know, and I don't like
that's, that's another argument because, you know, Rodgers has a ring and also has three MVPs.
Yeah, and he also, you know, likes to go on vision quests in the desert and is a weird guy. So,
well, let's not talk about the quests that Ben Roethlisberger goes on in the fucking
office. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, you know, would you rather a guy who rides a motorcycle without a helmet, gets a concussion, and then becomes like a, you know, precursor to Deshaun Watson, or, you know, your peyote doing quarterback? I don't know. They're both come with their drawbacks. So
yeah, no, I'm with you. They're
peyote
definitely
doing quarterback. What are you kidding? What are you kidding me, dude? Freaking old boy, his fat boy Roethlisberger had his incident in Lake Tahoe, and they had his incident in Georgia. It's like, nah.
Yeah, but how many times has Aaron Rodgers? How many times has Aaron Rodgers lost a home AFC or NFC championship game? So I mean, there's drawbacks.
That's
he doesn't care fine. About it. Doesn't care about the team. Cares about himself as a fucking loon. So you know,
Roethlisberger cares about the team.
Yeah, I mean, he showed up every Sunday, no matter how injured he was, and played every Sunday. I would say between the lines, I would rather have somebody mentally like Ben Roethlisberger than somebody like Aaron Rodgers. Off the field is a little different of a discussion, but
yeah. Yeah, well, no matter what, they're 1-2 from that era.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. And Eli, I think you got to put Eli Manning in that mix because the Patriots are not a singular dynasty because of Eli Manning.
Eli Manning is the no argument number three of the era because he has the two Super Bowls. Yep. And then after that, it gets murky a little bit. I guess Carson Palmer's in there too.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So we got off track a little bit.
Just a little bit. But yeah, we're thrilled about Clowney and Darby. Mm-hmm. I do think that Kyle Van Noy is a name to watch, especially with the Ty Spazer stuff dragging on as long as it has. You know, the fact that we don't really have a resolution on him. And a lot of people credit last year's defensive turnaround with acquiring Roquan Smith, which he was a huge part of it, don't get me wrong. But that also coincided with, you know, Ty Spazer coming back, and he plays a huge role on the defense. And I think of anybody who's available that could kind of fill that role, it's more Van Noy than Clowney. And, you know, I don't want OA dropping back into coverage. I don't want Ajabo dropping back into coverage. I would rather have a more, you know, a guy who's more accustomed to doing that.
Okay, hold on. You just reminded me of something I wanted to talk about. Okay. And we're going to talk about the preseason game, but I want to talk about some reactions from the preseason game. People are talking about David Ojabo and his preseason reps like it determines his value to the team, as if we haven't seen him take regular season reps.
The amount of times that I've gotten fucking Pickens highlights saying like, oh, Drew, you better be right about Ojabo and he's sucked in the preseason. Like, yeah, he's not looked great in the preseason. I don't think anybody on the pass rush side besides Malik Ham has looked particularly good in the preseason. So
the interior has looked good, but the edge rusher
for guys, yeah. You know, Tavius Robinson has not looked good, and David Ojabo has not looked good. But again, it's the preseason; it's not real football. And you know, Harbaugh had that whole emotional rant about, you know, these guys care and these games matter and blah blah blah. Don't tell me this wasn't, you know. Are you not entertained? You know, give that whole fucking rah-rah speech after the game after he lost. But, like, it really doesn't matter. It's not real football. These games are meaningless. You know, your preseason record does not matter, and you're going to get different performances from guys.
Well, and I think what Harbaugh really meant there was it matters to the guys because there's guys on the field who are playing to either – you know, have a job or not have a job. So, and mm-hmm. you know, that matters, I think, to guys who know they have a job who are out there too, because if everybody's not giving, you know, the proper amount of effort, then it can screw over the guy next to them. So
it's football. It's football. So it matters, but it's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything for your end of season goals other than, you know, who's there and who's not there.
Right.
It matters for seeing what you have at the back end of the roster. It doesn't matter for, you know, win and loss purpose.
That, and he even said that during the rant. He said,
yeah,
that win or loss does not matter. He's talking about effort.
Like, we should get into that game because that absolute fucking loser, Comsey, whatever the fuck his name was, Comsey.
Yep.
Hey, I don't know who the fuck you are. I had to look up your fucking Pro Football Reference page after you started running your mouth about how we're going to end the streak. Okay. And, you know, in his whole statement was like, fuck the streak. The streak doesn't matter. Like, who the fuck cares? We're going to break it. Okay, that's fine if that's your take on it. Like, you feel like you have a solidified roster spot. The game doesn't matter to you. Okay, cool. But then why is your fucking dickwad kicker making a game-winning kick and, you know, your fans are celebrating like you just won the Super Bowl if it doesn't matter? You pick a slant. Which one is it?
Well, he was doing the gritty.
After that, and they were losing at that point. You know, people seem to forget that the Washington Commanders had their entire first-string offense on the field for the whole first half and were losing that game. So
and ended up losing their best player on the team.
Because they care too much about a fucking preseason game. They care too much about winning and losing a preseason game.
Yeah. So I said this to Brian in a reply to one of his tweets, but the funniest thing to me about everything that has happened. So these Commanders fans are just, losers. And I've tried to tell you this for a long time, living amongst these people, these Washington sports fans are fucking like ridiculous. They don't know how to be a fan. They're like the least self-aware people in the world. If the Ravens have won that game, not one Ravens fan would be tagging a Commanders fan or, you know, bragging about it, because who gives a fuck? Like,
I 100%. I did it too early, but I tagged that dumb fuck offensive tackle.
Well, okay, but that's, and you know, I'm just
that's
saying.
That's because he ran his mouth.
Right, but I'm saying it, under any normal circumstances, Ravens fans don't give a shit. There's no bragging after winning a preseason game, even though it happened 24 straight times. No one's going out there like, you know, fucking, as our friend Mo likes to say, no one's twerking about it. So, like, yeah. I mean, these Commanders fans and the team fucking rush the field.
They're going to hang a banner.
It's
they're
crazy.
They're going to hang a fucking banner.
The reaction from Josh Harris, you know, doing hallucinogens before he went in the booth. To the team, you know, having a fucking gangbang on the field when they won. The kicker, you know, throwing up the L was he throwing up the L at us, or was he throwing it up to his own sideline? Like, and then the Commanders fans on Twitter acting like something was just accomplished, or that something was like taken from us. It's crazy.
They ended a streak that was pretty cool to have. I know people like to downplay the streak. It was cool to have said that. Yeah, we haven't lost a preseason game since, you know, Obama was in office. Like,
well,
that's cool.
You know what's funny about it? I don't remember that it exists until the first preseason game rolls around every year. It just it's not something that's in our like consciousness. No one cares about it.
It's one of those things that you get reminded of and you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, well, that's cool. I would like to win another game because, you know, winning is fun. Like, yeah. That's the only reason that I want to win games, is that I don't ever want to watch the Ravens lose a football game. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, preseason, whatever. Like, I'd never want to watch the Ravens lose a game. So from that aspect, like, yeah, it matters to win. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't fucking care.
Right. So I saw a Commanders fan. It was a reply to somebody that I know. It may have been Brian again. I don't know. But I saw a reply, and I had to quote tweet it, because the guy said, if you can't win a preseason game, how can you ever expect to win a playoff game? So I pulled their playoff history. They've won two playoff games since the Ravens existed. The Ravens have won two Super Bowls in that time frame.
Right. They're a loser franchise.
Right.
You
want to talk about, you only can win playoff games if you win preseason games. How many preseason games have they won since 1990 or 2000? Because they've won one playoff game this millennium, one, and it was in 2005. So we're talking about 18 years ago.
I was a year old.
Yeah,
this might be a hot take, but I think the Redskins football team Commander, you know, combo there is a worse franchise than the Browns since the Browns have come back.
Oh,
they are honestly the biggest dumpster fire in the NFL that nobody talks about, because nobody likes to pay attention to Dan Snyder. Now that Dan Snyder's gone,
I think they've definitely had more quarterbacks. And the joke is that
they
ruined
RG3. The big joke is that
Redskins jersey with the, you know, all the names, right?
Yeah. The Browns took it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Redskins are, or Commanders are fighting. They're a fucking loser franchise. So it sucked losing to them, because they're such fucking losers. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Like,
it also reinforces,
you know,
how big of losers they are, that they like got hard dicks over winning a preseason game.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I legitimately think they're going to hang a banner for that. I legitimately think there is going to be something celebrating that they beat the Ravens and ended that streak at 24.
I hope so.
That is the biggest thing that they've accomplished in my lifetime. I was alive for their last Super Bowl, but I was one, so it really doesn't matter because they won in 91, so it was really 92. So I was like one and a half at that point.
Yep. It was right before I turned two.
All right. So in my last, you know, in my last 30 years of life, that is probably their biggest accomplishment as a franchise, which is fucking pathetic if you really think about it. Like, you know, the Colts hanging that AFC runner-up banner after Deflategate and all that shit was kind of trolling to some extent of saying that, hey, the Patriots cheated, so we really should have won the AFC, so we really should have had a shot at the Super Bowl. Like, that was the whole point of that. Like, there is no point to celebrating ending a 24-game, you know, preseason winning streak. Like, that's loser shit. That's what loser franchises do. That's why they put up a fucking, you know, Dick's mannequin for Sean Taylor. That's why their stadium leaks shit every year. That's why the fucking tunnel fell apart. That's why they have, like, are regularly voted, like, the worst stadium to go to in the NFL. Like, they're a fucking loser franchise top to bottom.
Agreed. I mean, I've really been trying to tell you guys how bad it is.
Well, and I think
these people are fucked up in the head.
They don't exist until they win. Like, I remember I used to have back and forth with Wizards fans.
That is the difference between Redskins football team Commanders fans. Like, they are different than the other DC teams, especially the Nats and the Caps. I think maybe the Caps are second behind the football team. But there are people who are, like, they're very, you know, invested in the team. But they're so fucking irrational. Like, every year, these people think the team's going to be good this year. It's like, they're not going to be good.
Yeah, but that's like an NFC East disease. Because, I mean, Cowboys fans are like that. Giants fans are like that. And Eagles fans are like that, too. So.
Well, but the Giants, Eagles, and Cowboys a lot of times have a reason to think their team is going to be. Washington has never, in my opinion, I can't remember a team they fielded for.
When they had RG3, they had.
I was about to say, for at least a decade, where you should have any excitement. And in the preseason and, like, just like the offseason, these people, you would think that, you know, they had the offseason we just had where, you know, they signed Lamar Jackson to a 5-year deal and Roquan Smith and, you know, drafted Zay Flowers. Like, you would think, and signed Odell. But, like, you would think that happened every fucking offseason in Washington. But you go back and look at what they did, and it's like they signed Rex Grossman.
Fucking Santana Moss. They signed, you know, fucking Albert Hainsworth after he was stomping on people's heads.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, they sign old-ass washed-up guys. They have a little bit of Colts in them, too, where they sign names that are well past their prime and get the fan base riled up. But
Josh Norman?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, after that whole – and what happened to him? He fucking – nobody heard from him after that.
Right.
Yeah,
He did end up back. He went to Carolina?
He went to the Bills.
The Bills.
Back to the Bills.
Oh, the Bills. Remember, yeah.
He went to the Bills.
He went to the Bills.
And he got stiff arm by Derrick Henry.
The Derrick Henry stiff arm. Remember? Yeah, yeah.
Yep. That's how he resurfaced his career, by being the second guy to get posterized by Derrick Henry.
Much worse than Earl Thomas.
Worse than Earl Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Earl Thomas just got turned in the wrong direction and, you know, didn't turn back quick enough. Like, Josh Norman got fucking thrown.
He got choke slammed. Yeah, he got picked up by his neck and thrown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's shit.
From the game stand, from the win-loss standpoint, that's really all that needs to be said, is that the fucking Commanders are losers and, like, who the fuck cares? And really, from watching the game, like, Zay Flowers looked great, right?
Oh, yep.
I mean, I get Antonio Brown vibes every time he touches the ball. And I know that that's not, like, I got a couple tweets of, like, chill the fuck out, it's not against real competition. And that's fair, but, like, I can't help but every time he catches the ball, I just get Antonio Brown vibes.
Yeah, and you know what it is?
Take them in your fantasy drafts, kids.
You know what it is?
Take them in your fantasy drafts.
So, like, as I watch that, I'm thinking, like, that's the position that Hollywood Brown would be playing right now if he were on the team. And if Hollywood Brown caught the ball where he caught it, he would have turned and stepped out of bounds. That's what he would have done.
I don't even know. Would he have even caught the ball?
Maybe. Right, exactly. But, like, if he caught it, he would have turned and just, you know, taken two steps to the right and just stepped out of bounds and, you know, okay, let's line up and do it again. And Zay sees it. And like you said, like Antonio Brown was like, every time he touched the ball, he was looking for a lane or, you know, he was looking for a seam somewhere.
And he was okay with getting hit if the lane that he thought was there got close.
Right. But yeah, that's what Zay did. He caught the ball basically as like just a little outlet pass. I mean, that thing was maybe 2 yards in front of the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And he caught it, turned, looked upfield, found a lane and went, and he knew then, okay, I'm going to accelerate here. And he turned it into a 21-yard touchdown.
And, you know, like people like to compare him to Tyreek Hill too. Tyreek Hill's got, you know, track runner speed.
Mm-hmm.
And Zay Flowers is fast, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't have that kind of speed. But I think Zay Flowers is a much crisper route runner than Tyreek Hill. And again, has that vision that I don't think Tyreek Hill has.
Right.
Zay, and so that's why Zay like default to AB.
Yeah. Zay basically like manifested that TD when he caught it. He caught the ball, turned around and saw it. And he was like, okay, I'm going to do right now. And he went and immediately did that. And we're going to see a lot of that this season. I think like that was that entire play design was get Zay in space. And
see what he does with it.
They executed. I think even with Lamar, that could be better because I think everything's faster. Quicker. Yeah, exactly. Because if he was able to catch that ball, if he was able to catch that ball as he's approaching the sideline instead of when he's basically standing there waiting for it, then it's a whole. I mean, and it probably ends up the same way either way. But if you hit the guy when he's running towards the sideline, then you get the defense moving. It's if they were in better position,
will be closer to the line of scrimmage with Lamar because they're worried about him running. So he's got a little bit more space on the outside to work with. It's an easier touchdown for Zay Flowers.
Right. But it was great. Beautiful. Should we talk about, unfortunately, our most recent guest, Mo?
Well, so I was going to say, I got a couple more before we get to that. I was going to say Keaton Mitchell is making a 53-man roster.
Yep.
I don't think that's really in question anymore. He did get hurt on that kick return, but Harbaugh said it was fine. And and didn't want to put him back in. That's fine. But even he had like a 33-yard run, something like that, 30-plus-yard run, where, again, I haven't seen much of him in between the tackles, like look good running in between the tackles. And he's a little bit undersized, so it kind of makes sense. But he turns that corner fast. When he busts it outside and fucking gets around that edge, like he is fast. There's just a different kind of speed that he has to put guys away once he gets around the edge. And in an offense that you have, you know, J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, having that change of pace guy who can hit the edge with speed after you've had Gus Edwards beat the fuck out of the front seven for the whole game, and you have J.K. potentially being, a mix of both, like, he could be a real problem. And I'm excited to see what he can do, but I think that, again, I think he's solidified a roster spot. And I think Darius Washington has secured a roster spot.
Me too.
That's a guy that with Pepe Williams out for, a month at least, I feel like Pepe Williams is the kind of guy that's going to get, he has to be on the initial 53 to be put on IR so that he can get activated. So I feel like you're going to waive like, a Brett Urban kind of guy or maybe a Daryl Worley. I don't know who it's going to be. Somebody with 4+ years so that they are not subjected to the waiver process. And you got a handshake deal with them to come back once you put Pepe on IR. But I think Darius Washington could be your slot corner. I think he could be your, backup strong safety. I think that he could be kind of that, Kyle Hamilton role from last year where he's playing some dime linebacker too. Again, the kid's just got a nose for the ball. He's a little small. He's a little undersized, but he's always there and he's always making the play. So I think he's got to make the 53. Malik Ham, I'm a little bit torn on. Like, I don't think you can put him on waivers because I think somebody's going to take him. Somebody's always looking for a pass rusher. And we kind of have an issue there with pass rush depth. So I wouldn't mind holding on to him. And then the other name that gets thrown around is Volvo Check, whatever the fuck his name is, the tight end from Nebraska. It's Volvo. And then I think it's Check. And it's some, fucking Eastern European name, whatever. He probably like is a big fan of Vladimir Putin.
I thought it was like Vokolek.
Vokolek, yeah, could be that too. I don't fucking know. But that kid can ball. That kid, he looks good. Yeah.
I just don't, I mean, and
I don't see us carrying four tight ends, and I don't see, I'm 50-50 on whether he would get claimed if he, he's a definite practice squad guy if we can get him there.
Yeah, so we've been carrying four tight ends in past years, but that's under Greg Roman. But I think now, if we're going to carry additional players at a position, it's going to be guys who can play either corner or safety, guys that can float.
Yeah.
So that's,
you know, definitely agree.
So that's going to be our like surplus position. Guy that I was super impressed with was Josh Johnson. He looked fucking awesome. Yeah.
So I mean, it's definitely him over Anthony Brown right now. I would say that he has looked better of the two.
He looked better than Tyler Huntley this week, but you know, I don't know.
That whole, you know, emergency quarterback thing where you can, he has to be on your 53-man roster. And I just think with the way the Ravens are currently constructed, that you're not going to have Marlon Humphrey week one. It seems like a pretty consensus thing. Like, that's a dead roster spot that you're obviously not going to cut Marlon, but you need to have some kind of cornerback depth. And I think it's going to come down to, you know, Adarius Washington versus Josh Johnson for the 53-man roster. And I think you're going to give the edge there to Adarius Washington. Like, I just think that it, you know, makes sense. And I hope that there's a way to keep Josh Johnson around, because I trust him a hell of a lot more than I trust Tyler Huntley. But I'm also, you know, he's the kind of guy, he's got a lot of NFL experience, and somebody else might pick him up if they have quarterback injuries. Yeah. So
I was just, so I think he has, I think he wanted to be back on either on this team, I guess, or on the 49ers, but he looks like he is leaner than he's been for a couple of years. He was moving really well. He looked better running the ball than Tyler Huntley has looked. He was crisp. It looks like he knows the offense, and he was really in command. He has good chemistry with the receivers. So he just, to me, looked like a very competent backup.
Agreed. And, you know, I would rather him than Huntley. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think Huntley has some prosha in him where I've wanted him gone, and just for whatever reason, they're not going to get him gone.
Yeah.
And here's what it is. But well, speaking of prosha, Tylan Wallace has clearly won wide receiver 6.
100%.
You know, he has finally, people were hyping him up when we took him in the 4th round. Like, this is a guy who should have been a 1st round pick if he didn't get hurt at Oklahoma State. And he's got all this skill, and, you know, he's 5'11", but he plays like he's 6'3", and he knows how to use his body and use angles and bring in tough catches. And you've seen it twice now on touchdowns where he gets, you know, thrown a ball that only the wide receiver can catch and really meant for somebody who's bigger than him, but he finds a way to bring it in and get both of his feet in bounds. He's looked good. And I just, again, I keep saying, like, this is the end of James Prochet, but I've said this is the end of James Prochet for 3 years. So,
well, okay. Like, if you really want to, like, I know we don't like to do this with any sport, to go back and say, like, one play is the difference between winning and losing, but James Prochet had a ball, and it, you know,
wasn't a great throw, but it's something he should have caught.
Well, so, and it was the only throw he could make, because Saleh blew a block. So he had interior pressure, threw off his back foot, and the ball was where it needed to be. And James Prochet, instead of going up and getting the ball with his hands, which is the scouting report on him, is, you know, hands, he's a hands guy. He's not a speed guy. He's not an athleticism guy. He's not a routes guy. He is a hands
guy.
Not
a size guy. He's a hands guy.
Right. And ball's dropped in where it needs to be. And instead of going up and getting it, he lets it come into his body. He bobbles it, turns into an interception, and we lose by 1 point. So you score a touchdown there. There is no Joey Sly walk-off field goal for us to lose that game. So, and again, I don't care. I'm just saying, like, if you want to go back and pin it on someone, that's a mistake. And even if you don't catch the ball, if it's put in a place, the
play defense at that point,
the cornerback didn't make a play on the ball. He handed the ball to the cornerback. He created the play for the cornerback just by either go up and get it or make it so that the only way that ball isn't caught by you is if it's on the ground. You cannot let the ball bounce up in the air in the end zone with a guy playing, you know, tight defense on you. You can't do it.
And it's been, so he had the fumble on the punt return, you know, first preseason game. He had that bonehead play in the first half with, you know, again, maybe expecting him to pull that catch in is a little bit too much. I don't know. But regardless,
it cannot end the way it ended.
Can't end an interception. So it ended poorly, and it was his fault. And then you and I were talking about before we started recording with that punt that he let, you know, go and let bounce, and they downed it, you know, very deep in Ravens territory. Like, that's a bad decision, because you either fair catch that and, you know, you get what I think that ended up on the 2, right?
Yeah. Ended up on the two, and on the first play, on the first play, we ran it out. It just doesn't matter. I think John Harbaugh, he's seen the guy make special teams.
It's a bonehead mental mistake.
Special teams is a mental game.
That's what ends up getting you cut. And so we're now 2 weeks in the preseason, and everything James Prochet has put on tape of note is negative.
Yep.
And it's things that you talk about his strengths for, that he's smart with the ball on special teams and he's not going to make the play that hurts you. And then he fumbles and he makes the poor decision to, you know, and it only netted a loss of 6 yards in field position, but maybe that 6 yards matters in a regular season game.
That's okay. But you can't, that's an oversimplification to say it's 6 yards, because when you're talking about the, you know, the 10 or the 8 or wherever it was, or the 2 yard line, you don't want your offense starting on the 2 yard line ever. That's fucking.
I agree. What I'm saying is that is an avoidable mental mistake.
Yeah.
That sticks out on film if you're just looking at James Prochet.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying, if it's the 19 yard line versus the 25 yard line, that's not the same conversation. But we're talking about having your quarterback standing in the end zone.
You were going to be pinned deep in your own territory to start that drive. And he made it significantly worse by making a dumb mental mistake.
He shrank the playbook.
Right, exactly. He put you in a bad spot to start that drive. And like you said, it ended up working out, but that's not the point of, you know, it was still a mistake. It doesn't absolve his mistake.
I believe that the play that saved that was Pat Ricard on a crosser.
Yeah, and, you know, I keep getting told,
lined up as a tight end.
Cut. Yeah, Pat Ricard is going to get cut. Drew, you're going to be devastated. Nobody's fucking cutting Pat Ricard.
No chance.
If I have to one more argument with some dumb fuck on Twitter who's talking to me about how this isn't Greg Roman's offense anymore, Todd Monken has been very clear since day one that he is a, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of guy. Okay, Pat Ricard in heavy sets and running situations has proven to work since he's gotten into the NFL. And I don't think Todd Monken's going to come in and say, yeah, this Greg Roman guy was great at running the ball, but we're going to totally throw everything that he did out the window. The strength of Todd Monken is that he's able to look at what Greg Roman did well and then implement things in the pass game, pass concepts that work on top of that. That Greg Roman was not able to take things to that second level, and Todd Monken is. Pat Ricard's not going anywhere.
And you want to talk about potentially us carrying four tight ends? Pat Ricard is the fourth tight end, basically.
Pat Ricard is Nick Boyle and Vontae Leach and potentially a backup left guard or right guard all in one.
That's what that I mean. So, we could still carry four tight ends without carrying four tight ends.
And honestly, you could put him on the defensive line. Like, he's 6'2", 315 pounds. Like, he can play defensive line. That is not a guy you get rid of. And special teams. And honestly, if you told Pat Ricard that you want him to be your emergency quarterback and that he needs to spend the next 2 weeks throwing a ball to learn how to throw a 60-yard spiral, he'd fucking figure it out. Like, he's just that guy. And I'm sick and tired of having to defend him on the internet to dumb fucking people who just hear Pat Ricard, think of Greg Roman, and get mad about it. It's the same as people who tell me that J.K. Dobbins is important to the team. I had a tweet today where I was just like, who are your five most important Ravens that you don't want to see go down? And I had a ton of people in my comments who were like, why didn't you put J.K. Dobbins on that list? And it's because he's just not that guy. I looked it up. I did the math out. There were 2-5 in games where he touched the ball more than 15 times. And that's, you know, receiving and rushing. We're 3-6 in games where he has over 75 yards from scrimmage. Like, again, you can stat me to death on him and you can tell me that he's this great running back and he averages 6 yards a carry. And most of the time when you're talking about those stats, you're cherry picking about 12 games out of his career. He's not it. He's not that important. And I don't really understand the love for J.K. Dobbins. Also, again, going on camera and playing victim and talking about the people who thought bad of me are fucking bad people. I'm a good guy. Like, go fuck yourself, you fucking clown. Like, I'm still waiting for you to show up in my house, you fucking loser. But I don't know, man. I'm kind of sick of our fans again. I go through phases. Jake, you're not on Twitter much, so I'm curious. Like, you are a Pat Ricard guy, yes?
Do I support him being on the team? I do. He's your jack of all trades. Obviously, right. Terrorists there asking him to run a pose. So, no.
Exactly.
I support Pat Ricard and his job.
you record, but you support Pat Ricard doing what he's supposed to do, which is what Monken's going to make him do. And then on the J.K. Dobbins stuff, like, you're not as plugged in on the internet and what a fucking whiny little twat he is all the time. But, like, you know, if J.K. Dobbins got released today, like, do you think the Ravens running back room is fucked? Like, do you think that we're not going to be able to run the ball anymore if he's not there?
Fucked is the wrong word. Not to mention, I mean, we've seen the flashes last week with Justice Hill having some juice to where he's not just your special teams guy. He can have some serious carries in the regular season. Keaton Mitchell's a change of pace back. Gus Edwards is obviously the hammer. It's like, he does make your running back room better, but to say that the running back room is completely fucked without him, it's the wrong word.
It's wrong.
Not to mention, as far as his personality goes, this is the old man yells at the clouds and me. I blame that entire generation, because you could blame him for being a cunt, but that being said, most people his age now are fucking cunts anyway. Cunts. So.
He's a byproduct
of the Zoomers.
Right.
He's a byproduct of the Zoomers.
He's an entitled dipshit. I'm being very careful with my words here. He's an entitled, you know, little brat who thinks that he is this, you know, fucking God's gift to the Ravens offense. Like, bud, we don't need you. We don't need you faking injuries for the first 2 weeks of fucking training camp. We don't need you crying on Zoom calls for more money. We need you to shut your fucking mouth, show up to the practice field, and play fucking football. And even then, when you play football well, it has not translated to wins. Ravens are 16-10 in the 26 games, including playoffs that he's played. And so, like I said, they were 2-5 in games that he has over 15 touches. So that would leave them at, where's my math here? Fucking 14-4 in games where he doesn't have 15 touches and he plays. That's a real bad split there for you. And I understand that. And, you know, they were against good teams that he touches the ball more. You know, there were like 1-3 or 1-2 against Pittsburgh when he goes off. And then you look at games where he's got over 75 yards. Again, it's the same thing. Like, we have a significantly better record of 13-4 when he doesn't get over 75 yards. So to me, that screams change of pace back. That screams to me a guy who you give the ball 10 times a game, and maybe he does something with it, maybe he doesn't. But if he's not doing something with those 10 carries, then Gus Edwards is going to go off, or Justice Hill is going to go off.
He's a home run hitter. So, he's a guy who I think is more effective in smaller doses, like you said, like 9, 10 carries, and maybe you target him in the pass game 2 or 3 times a game, and he's going to make more out of those opportunities than if you just
hit
the ball over and over again.
Where did this narrative come from that he's this great pass-catching running back? I don't understand it. He was not a great pass catching running back at Ohio State.
No. And I don't see him that way. I see him as a guy that if you can scheme something up to get him like a screen pass or just get him the ball in space, that's just like a cheat code handoff. You know, you're just trying to get the running back the ball in space. I'm not saying he's a guy that's like
Alvin Kamara.
Kamara who can Caffrey. Who can go out and basically like cook a cornerback. I don't see him being that guy, or Saquon Barkley even.
Right, but he gets put in the discussion with those guys, and it just, I don't get it. And like, you know, I've had my run-ins with him, and so when I make a valid point about what he does well and what he doesn't do well, I get labeled as, oh, you're being salty. But the reality is, like, it's a factual statement. He's just not that good. He's not good enough that you bend over backwards and you make him your feature back and you fucking acquiesce to his ridiculous demands.
Well, if I don't know what his goal is. Ultimately, I think, and we've
clearly said, money.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I think we've mentioned it before, but what really broke the brains of all running backs was the contract that Zeke got, that $90 million mm-hmm. contract, because now that's like people think that's the norm, and no one's ever going to get that contract again.
No, you're not. And nor is really, there are not a lot of running backs in the NFL that are ever worth that kind of money.
No, the only, right now, to me, the only guy who's worth it is McCaffrey.
Yeah. And he's got it. He got similar money, and he's proven when healthy that he is worth that money.
Right. And again, and you got killed by JK about when healthy, but that really applies to any good running back because they get hurt a lot. Like Derrick Henry, who's a fucking Frankenstein monster, he missed a considerable amount of time. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, the foot injury, but like you know, these guys, the wear and tear that they take, and this is their point, I guess, they deserve to have their money like more front loaded because their careers are shorter. That's just not how it works, man. That's the position you chose. Like, you know, guys who work on fucking Alaskan crabbing boats don't say, you know, I need to get my money up front. You still got to go catch the fucking crabs.
I mean, just to tie things back to shit that I get on Twitter, like, you know, running backs deserve more money than teachers, but I don't know if they deserve that much money. Yeah, those fucking, oh, God. I will never tweet about how elementary school teachers are glorified babysitters again because of how fucking stupid the responses I got were for that. You're a teacher, good for you. Congratulations, like, you know, fucking great. You're fucking saving the youth, whatever the fuck you want to say about yourself. Congratulations. Honestly, go fuck yourself. You have a liberal arts degree that you paid way too much money for. You work fucking 7 to 2 every day, and you fucking go home and grade some kids, you know, fucking 3 times tables homework assignment. Like, you want a fucking cookie for that. It's the same thing as running backs, though. Like, yeah, congratulations, J.K. Dobbins. You averaged 6 yards a carry. In that same offense, Gus Edwards averages like 5.3, and fucking guys that we pulled off the street who hadn't played football in 2 years average like 4.5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
If you want to sit here and tell me that you're 1.5 yards a carry better than, you know, Devontae Freeman, 3 years removed from being relevant at all, yeah, good for you. How much money is that worth? Not much.
Right. Well, yeah, I think the you know, JK's, all his arguments and the issue we took with you was that he felt you were saying he was injury prone when real.
The issue that he took, I could tell you again, I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good at the issue that he took with me is that he's a sensitive little fucking twat. And he saw somebody making very valid points to get rid of him and bring somebody else in who wasn't crying about money. And he took it personally and he got mad. He has no control over his emotions. And I even said this kind of in jest as like a, you know, fucking throwaway line. But if he's going to get that mad at shit that I say online, me, I have fucking 1,300 followers and don't matter to anybody. Like, you're going to get that fucking upset at me. Do you really want to hand that guy the ball, you know, 4th and 1 and you need to pick up the first down?
Well,
no, he's fucking mentally weak.
So my point is this. If his, you know, rebuttal to that is, I've only been hurt one time. Okay, here's the problem. You got hurt one time. You missed a lot of games. And during that time when you were out, number one, we have Gus Edwards, who is as productive as J.K. Dobbins.
If not more productive, because he can run between the tackles more efficiently than J.K. Dobbins can.
But okay, so we have, so here's the two factors here is Gus Edwards exists. Gus Edwards can be a, you know, an RB1 on a lot of teams. And then the secondary one is in his absence and in the absence of Gus as well, when we had to really just rebuild the running back room on the fly. And Justice Hill, even being out, guys that we drafted to, like, you know, the structure was there, like the architecture of the team was, we drafted these guys to be
we were a Mike Shanahan Broncos caliber running offense. You could plug any idiot in there, and if they have experience playing running back, they can succeed.
Yeah, but in 2021. When we had none of those three guys, and we didn't have Lamar Jackson for 5 games, we still were 6th in running in the league.
Third.
We were third. I thought we were 6th.
No,
I
mean, we were third.
That, I think that is the only thing that EDC needs to say to JK if he's asking for more money. Is like, dude, when you were out, and Gus and Justice and Lamar was out for 5 games, so that's the 4 best ball carriers on the team, we still were one of the best running teams in the league. We can do it with anyone.
And even when fully healthy, J.K. Dobbins is not the best ball carrier on this team. It's Lamar.
Right.
So this whole nonsense of, you know, you're – so this started because I was talking about, you know, how people were overvaluing what J.K. Dobbins brings to the table to us, you know, getting very upset with me for not including him in kind of a top 5 list that I'd made off the top of my head. Like, he's not even the best runner on it. So Lamar is the guy. Like, Lamar is the offense. The offense revolves around Lamar. We don't need J.K. Dobbins. And again, I've jokingly thrown, or not jokingly, but honestly, like, if it's possible, you know, fucking throw J.K. Dobbins in a 6th round pick to Indianapolis and bring in Jonathan Taylor. I'd much rather have Jonathan Taylor because he's actually accomplished something in his career. J.K. Dobbins has accomplished nothing for a full season. At least, you know, Jonathan Taylor is a year removed from 1,800 yards and 20 touchdowns. That's a good running back. That's a Super Bowl winning move. J.K. Dobbins is not a Super Bowl winning move. You know,
I mean, I think Jonathan Taylor is nobody would question if you said he's a top five running back in the NFL.
You'd be stunned at the amount of Ravens fans who have tweeted me saying that J.K. Dobbins is better than Jonathan Taylor, which is just fucking bizarre.
They're basing that just on their own emotions. They're not basing that on any kind of fact. And I think J.K. Dobbins is good. I'm just saying, like, you can't say that he's better than Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor's proven it.
Yeah, and J.K. Dobbins is not. And I don't know, we have a weird fan base with just weird hangups on players, weird obsessions with guys who are not worth being obsessed over. J.K. Dobbins falls into that. Pat Ricard falls into that in the opposite direction. You know, I'm sure there's guys that I'm as Crochet. Yeah, and people have soured on him. But again, look how quick they soured on him. Last year, at
make the argument that in both directions, because there's people like me and you who, you know.
Right.
Want him in Guantanamo. Yeah, we want him in Guantanamo Bay.
I wanted him in Guantanamo Bay because Gamer God 29 existed.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really about James. It's about Gamer God.
And yeah, I give him shit on the pod. He's a good kid, but like, you know,
Fuck him. No, he's not.
Well,
Fuck him.
Because he doesn't get you. Like I've bullied that kid for years. He doesn't understand that like you're the same person as me mentally. But there are people
fuck
like
him and his little bitch friend Justin.
It's so funny that they hate you and they like me.
They're like, dick riding Drew. Like, no, he's my actual friend.
Yeah, but the funniest thing is that they're like every time like I say something off the wall to them, they'll get like a response back to them of like, wow, this guy's a cocksucker. Like, you know, he should go fuck himself. And they're like, no, Drew's just trolling. You know, he's just an asshole. Like, this is the way he is. And then when you tweet something, they're like, oh, fuck you. Like, you're the worst person in the world. I'm like, he's literally doing the same thing that I do.
That Justin guy was the lead offender of being very upset about my YouTube Out Loud at the Bar tweet.
I fully disagree. He was not the lead. He was just the most successful at getting attention to it.
Oh, yeah. There was that other guy.
Yeah. He was not the most aggressive or angry about it. He was just kind of like, if I say fuck this guy, I'm going to get like 100 retweets.
He quote tweeted me every day for like 6 days.
I know. It was kind of funny. I was somewhat enjoying that. And then one time I was like, you understand like he doesn't care, right? Like you're not like going to get to him and make him like delete the tweet. And he's like, yeah, he's just an asshole. I'm like, yeah, but so am I. Like, that's half the shit that I say. Oh, good times. I feel like
you two have an announcement to make.
I feel like we have something more before that we're supposed to talk about that we missed.
Did we?
I don't know. I feel like I had something important to get to.
Let's see.
Clearly not that important. Oh, Lamar Jackson playing Sunday. Where are we on that?
Oh, yeah. Do it. Absolutely.
100%. I want to see him. On Monday, I was out to dinner and I took my kid over to another place to like do the claw machine or whatever. And while we were walking past the window, I look and I see Lamar Jackson in uniform. So he was in uniform, in pads, warming up. And I was like, holy shit. Is he like, are we going to see Lamar Jackson take snaps? Because I heard he wasn't going to play, but he's dressed. Mm-hmm. So I was excited. I get home and I turn it on. He's back in street clothes by the time the game started. So, no, I mean, like, I think it's good for him. 100% is good for him to just get some game reps. And the last preseason game, you're going to see guys, you know, guys are going to be playing hard because there's a lot of guys. There's been no cutdowns. So every single guy on the field who may be a bubble guy and they may be, you know, they may plug him in with the starters, or, you know, it may be like a mix and match thing, but like every guy on the field is going to be playing just to, you know,
for
whether
their job.
Whether it's for their job or it's the starters playing for one series just to get like game speed reps in.
Right.
The reason they're playing one series, cause like, okay, go play like it's a real game for one series and then you can go take the night off. But I think that's good for Lamar, having not played since December, having, you know, all the drama of the offseason, and it's all behind
and
him.
And he wants to play.
Yeah, exactly.
So the only reason that this is a discussion point is that John Harbaugh, for some fucking reason, I have no idea why, just like told the media that Lamar wants to play and we're thinking about it. And
Harbaugh knows what he's doing. He is great at getting people going.
Oh, he's a you know, him and EDC are elite trolls. Nobody really wants to, you know, have that discussion, but they are. My only caveat to being okay with Lamar playing is that you need the full offensive line in front of him. I don't want him out on the field and some, you know, dipshit grocery bagger is playing left tackle, gets blown off from the snap, and Lamar gets killed for it. And I also don't want Lamar handcuffed playbook wise. I keep seeing people suggest that Lamar should go out and play one series, you know, dump off the ball for a, you know, 5 to 7 yard pass 3 times and get off the field. Like, I'm not interested in seeing that. Like, I want Lamar to go out there and look at the play that he sees in front of him, be able to audible at the line of scrimmage like he's been practicing, like he's been allowed to do with Todd Monken. Like, I want Lamar to treat this like a game situation, because you are putting yourself in far more danger if you go out there and half-ass it. So I want either full-scale Lamar with full-scale weapons and full-scale protection around him, or I don't want Lamar at all.
I want to see him not only with the offensive line, but I'd like to see the entire offensive unit, because I would really love to see him and those wide receivers just get, like I said, some true game speed reps in against real competition. You know, all reports are that he's clicking well with basically everybody. So that's great, but I'd love to see it. And I think it would be good for morale for the team and for the fan base.
Especially because he wants to be those guys.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, right.
Yeah.
Lamar's got a lot of pride. He signed that deal, and now he feels like he owes Baltimore and every fan everything.
You paid the right guy in terms of he's not going to get fat and happy. If anything, he's going to work 10 times harder because you're paying him 10 times more.
Yeah. Well, he got what he wanted. Exactly. So like,
what he wanted. So he wants to give you what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, we don't want to see him out there for a half, like the Commanders did last week.
No,
that's crazy. But just to see him run a series or two with the full offensive unit, Odell out there, that'd be fucking great to see.
Yeah. Literally give me the Bateman, full package.
Bateman, another guy we haven't seen since November of last year.
Yeah, and he's, by all reports, has kind of looked like himself at practice. So again, give me the full Lamar. Give me the full week one experience for a series on Sunday, and I'm happy. If you start half-assing it and don't put everybody out there with Lamar and hold him hostage and only let him call certain plays, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, and well, Aguilar's never run a meaningful rep with Lamar. So, I mean, Zay.
Zay, yeah. Put everyone out there. Let them all go.
You know, so I fully expect us to win. I'm not like putting a prediction on the record right now, but
Are we doing a pants jersey combo thing here? So we're advocating for Lamar to go out there and get game reps. Do we need game reps for zone 32 to get back in the swing of things for uniform?
I'll do a rep. So we've worn white pants and black pants so far. I think maybe we wear purple pants this week. I agree. So maybe and they don't really like to run this back. Like even Lacey said, she doesn't love this look. But the purple. Maybe they do a purple this week. Are we at home this week?
I don't remember. Maybe.
I'm not sure.
Let me check. Yeah, let me check. If we're on the road, it's 100% going to be white jersey, purple pants.
Yeah.
No, we're away. So it's going to be white jersey, purple pants this week. 100%.
All right, what's the score?
I think we lose this game. I think it's going to be Buccaneers 27, Ravens 17.
All right, I'm going to go Ravens 21, Buccaneers 17. Agree with the white-purple, and I think that we're going to get in a Darius Washington game-sealing interception that seals his roster spot. There we go. There's my hot take. I'm in midseason form already. Preseason, I'm ready to go. Jake?
23-19, Tampa Bay.
How do we get 19? How does that work?
How do we get 19?
Yeah.
4 field goals and a touchdown.
Okay, that's fair. And are you on board with the white and purple?
I mean, I can see it. Personally, I'd want to waste the icy look now. That way that hex doesn't come into our peripherals during the regular season, but that's just me. Plus, you're going down to Tampa Bay and everything. It's hot as fuck down there. Although, it is Florida. And in Florida, I mean, those teams do like to, although it's probably a night game, right? So, yeah, they'll probably wear their home uniforms.
Yeah, it's a night game.
And so I'm just going to predict for Grant, he's going to want us to wear, you know, George Pickens and Sauce Gardner, you know, commemorative patches on our jerseys. He doesn't care what color they are. He's going to brag about how George Pickens caught a ball on some fucking grocery bagger tonight. And, you know, he doesn't care about the end result because he just wants to make the team. So there we go.
Right. Yeah. Oh, so what I was going to say, though, is I think we win the week one game by double digits.
By three scores. I don't think Lamar Jackson plays all of week one.
But the Texans, if they have a strength going in, I think their defense is the strength because the offense is so young. And, you know, I think they have
a defensive-minded head coach, too. So
right. They will click. That offense is going to click. Again, it's one of my sleeper teams in the AFC. But I think week one might be a bit of a debacle for them because the offense is, it's a rookie quarterback, rookie head coach. And
David Ajabo has never lost to CJ Stroud. So just, you know.
Well, and so like John Metchie is like one of their better wide receivers, but he's never played an NFL game because he had cancer last year. So, you know, like I think that things like that are going to take a few weeks to really start to fall into place for them. So we're catching them at a good time and it's going to end up being a valuable win for us. But yeah, I think it's going to be a double digit win. But that being said, if Lamar Jackson goes into that game with zero reps since he got hurt, I don't like that. I think two series would be good this week for him.
Yeah. I'm fully on board with the two series as long as you take the leash off and let that guy do what he wants to do.
It has to be the full offensive unit.
Yeah,
the only interchangeable piece would be at running back. I think you could really put anybody out there at running back because I think they're all capable.
And again, this is me personally pushing narratives that I've been saying that I know are true. I would love to see no name running backs out there and see them, you know, fucking eat while Lamar's on the field. Just so I could turn around and say, yeah, look at this asshole asking for fucking top of the market money when he's not working.
Well, I'd love to see Keaton Mitchell out there with the ones because I think the other three guys are pretty much a lock to make the roster.
Yeah. So, it's right now the running back battle has got to be Keaton Mitchell versus Melvin Gordon. So maybe you let them both run with the ones and see who does better.
Yeah. So do split it. So run two series, one with Mitchell, one with Gordon, and see which one looks better. And, you know, I like to keep up with our Canadian friend Cole's tweets, and he was saying how Keaton Mitchell only had two pass pro reps, but they were very strong reps.
Good.
And that's not his fault that he only got two. He is undersized, but if he's proficient at it, like we saw Maurice Jones-Drew, basically knocked Sean Merriman out. Sean Merriman was one of the biggest like physical freaks you ever seen in the fucking NFL. And he basically knocked him out cold on the field with a pass pro block.
Yeah.
So a small running back can be a good blocker. It's about being willing. It's about being willing.
And Keaton Mitchell has definitely shown that he's willing to take a hit and willing to put himself in harm's way to do what's best for the team. So
All
right, so, we have a large announcement to get to.
Major Zone 32 announcement buried at the end of the episode. We'll clip it for sure.
Big breaking news, probably the biggest news of Zone 32 ever, besides Grant getting signed. But you know,
yeah, but
not really.
He hasn't really officially been signed. You know, Visionless Dave made a whole like case out of a guy this week who claims he's an NFL player because he was on an NFL preseason roster, never got signed to the 53. And Visionless Dave says, well, then you're not an NFL player. So
fair. So Grant's not an NFL player yet.
Not yet, but he's on the way. Hopefully, you know, we're pulling for him. That kind of ties
in nicely to our announcement, because when you and I are doing four shows a month and live streams for Ravens games on the PSF app, maybe we'll be watching Grant and we can be critical of him, you know, in real time. So
very true. Yep. So Zone 32 is going to be sort of expanding our reach. We're going to be on the Pro Sports Fans app. The Twitter handle is PSF_app. You can find it in the App Store. I think right now it's only available for iPhone, but Android is coming. So, you know, Jake.
If you don't have an iPhone in 2023, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, so. Agreed. I was gonna say sorry, but actually, go fuck yourself for having an Android.
Fuck you, basic ass bitches, your fucking tech Apple overlords who restrict your marketplace.
You can't
Google's
even.
Google's my overlord.
You can't
and they're
even,
both cunts,
you,
but
you
fuck
can't
Apple.
Even, you can't even consume. You can't even consume
the great content we're gonna put
your out. your own podcast content because your phone is basically built for Walmart
and
shoppers
people.
And people who live in like South Dakota.
Yeah, people who don't know that Apple exists yet. People who didn't have a Mac computer and don't understand that kind of stuff. So Will and I will be live for at least 8 games this year.
Yep.
Kind of a watch along setting. You'll get to watch us, swear and yell at the TV in real time.
So here's the breakdown. So when I was approached about this, my first question, because it was proposed to me as, hey, we like what you're doing. We want to pair you up with someone, and then you can live stream Ravens games and do a weekly show. And I said, well, I already do a weekly show, and I got a guy in mind. So I'm talking about Drew. Obviously, so Jake is a West Coast guy. It has a bit of an unpredictable schedule. So I didn't want to volunteer people who I know have other obligations going. So I texted Drew and I said, I'm doing this and you're doing it too. I didn't even ask him.
I didn't really give him much of an option. But,
yeah. So they said, we like what you're doing. We want to pair you up. I said, no, I got somebody. But the only way we're going to do this is if we can do it the way we've been doing it. If you have any sort of reservations about colorful language or, rage or, bourbon drinking on camera or just basically what we do here, then we're not the guys for you. And they said, no, that's exactly what we're looking for. So you're perfect for what we're trying to accomplish. So basically this app replaces, for a game watching fan. And people, I think, who listen to this podcast are similar to us, where we're guys who we like sports. We like to talk about it with other people. We like to gamble on it, and we like to track it in real time. So this app sort of gives you the ability to do all that in one place. And obviously, I know people who are listening to this are people who know us from Twitter. So like, it's never going to replace Twitter. Twitter is its own thing. X, whatever.
What Twitter doesn't have, and so I've kind of, because again, my job at Fenway, like I'm not in front of a television on, Red Sox game days. I'm sitting at Fenway Park, and so the other night while I was there for a game, I was there for a concert. I decided to like track baseball for that, and it's much easier to kind of scroll through their app and see, who's got how many strikeouts, how many runs were scored, things like that, that maybe you got to work a little bit harder to find on the ESPN app or, CBS or Fox app, whatever. Like, it's a little bit more available to you there.
Yeah. So
and it's a little bit more built for your fantasy and gambling needs.
Yeah, exactly. So the way that, when I'm looking for something, when something's going on, when I'm watching a game or something's going on in sports, I'm bouncing between apps a lot of times. I'm like, okay, I go to the Score app, and it's built, everything's built differently. It displays it differently. Or if I have a bet on something, I'm going to FanDuel or DraftKings or Barstool or whatever, wherever you have it, or the Action app. The Action app is it's a similar concept, but it's sort of trying to pull in the gambling aspect. What this app is able to do is it's able to combine the live reaction and really live streaming aspect of spaces from Twitter and then the Twitter timeline. So everybody kind of reacting at one time. So, it's obviously if you're in a live stream, you're able to be in a chat room at the same time. So you're able to live react, interact with people who are presenting it. So in this case, it would be me and Drew. And, our reactions, we're not going to be sitting there doing play-by-play. We're not trained professionals. We are people who, have a passion for the team. People seem to enjoy our reactions to things. So we've never done a live stream before. So it's going to be sort of an experimental thing, but hopefully our live reactions are as enjoyable as these recorded ones, which again, these aren't very edited. If anything's edited, it's because it would probably get Drew, kicked out of the country, something he said.
Most likely.
Yeah. So this app is going to give you the ability to have a second screen when you're watching a game. And it's going to be me and Drew reacting to what's happening as it's happening. You able to interact with us on the screen. It's going to have live scoring updates, not only for the game you're watching, but games that are you're not watching. So you're going to have sort of a ticker going, and it's going to have live odds update. So that's the biggest one, I think, that they have the ability to keep updating odds for the game you're watching while you're watching it. So basically it's replacing like probably two or three apps that you're already using. And it's never going to replace watching the game. But if you can't watch the game, it's a good way to sort of replace that, whether you're out of market or you're, you know, in your car, whatever your limitation might be. This is probably a good, you know, alternative to that. So we're going to give you more information with the tweet in terms of, you know, how to sign up, where to find it. We'll link you. But this is a big step for Zone 32. Just a, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're just sort of expanding our reach, and hopefully reaching more people. And then, you know, we're going to keep doing the podcast and we're going to do live streams. So I think the plan that Drew and I have, since it's just me and him doing the PSF aspect of it, is we're going to do it the same night we record. We're going to go live 30 minutes or so, 20 to 30 minutes of live before we go and record the podcast. So it's sort of a precursor, and what we'll probably use it for is getting ideas for what we want to do in the episode too. So anybody that listens to this should also do the live stream so they can give suggestions, or we can get, you know, interaction and feedback. So Drew, I was just saying, we're going to use the live show on the app as sort of a way to crowdsource ideas for the episode we record right after.
Yeah, no, that's definitely kind of the idea, is that the live show would be more of a, you know, fan-driven content of what do you guys want to hear us talk about? And then from there, we'd actually give you like an episode. But, you know, and again, like we pull a lot of our ideas of, you know, what we talk about on here from what's kind of trending on Twitter. So it's an easier way to kind of get your guys' feedback in real time and talk about it.
Yeah,
there's definitely things that we miss. So
yeah, for people who listen, I think it's actually pretty cool that immediately before we record the podcast, they can put things in front of us that they want us to talk about on the episode. So, you know, a lot of times it can take us two or three episodes to catch up with people who, like, they said, hey, will you do this? Will you do that? And we already had a plan, or, you know, like, we'd already had a guest or whatever the case may be. But if we have people literally right before we start recording tell us, hey, can you talk about this in the episode? Or, you know, like, they have a question that we hadn't thought of. I think it's a good way to just create some synergy between the live fan interaction
more feedback and more, I don't know if access to us, because we're not like hard to reach, but it's harder to reach us in real time.
Well, but like if you DM me right now while we're recording, I won't see it until we're done.
Exactly. Yeah. Same shit here, is that it's kind of, you're 2 weeks behind at that point. You're not going to hear us talk about what you actually, you know, care about until the next week's episode at the earliest. And then probably we'll forget. And then on top of that, two people seem to care about what Grant has to say. So, and Grant's hard to reach on the internet. So this is a lot easier of, you know, you put it in front of us, maybe you and I talk about it a little bit there, and then we get Grant's thoughts on it on the show. So,
yeah. Well, and on that note too, you know, with the app, you know, we're looking for advertisers, sponsors. So anybody who's listening, who may have a connection to it or who may want to sponsor, I have no idea like the demographic of people that we're talking to right now. So anybody who might want to, get involved in that, just, you know, send us a DM, or I think both of us.
Wild Turkey, my DMs are open. So
Turkey is listening, come on in. Yeah. But they I must. Mean, literally anybody. I like, if you know, if you have a plumbing company or whatever, like if it's something you think would benefit your company and you like what we're doing, DM us. I think we have our DMs open for. I think I open it up to anybody.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. So.
I don't.
Yeah. Let us know. Yeah. Let us know. It's all new to us too. So, but it's big. It's a big, I think, growth opportunity for everybody here.
And it's different. This is more conversational, traditional, and like we have topics in mind when we come into it, and we're not really reacting to something happening in front of us. And we've had a couple times on here where news is broken while we're recording or whatever, but it's not the same as you know, watching a game and talking about a play or a player that, you know, just happened 30 seconds ago versus when we've had, you know, a day or two to digest. And then also, like we said, you know, the interactive part with the fans of there's stuff that probably Will and I think about or tweet about that we don't really talk about on here.
Yep.
That, you know, getting our thoughts live on something would be, you know,
yeah,
fun.
Well, and the other thing is this, and I don't know if this is going to end up getting us canceled from the app or not, but when I watch games, I get shit about this from a lot of people. I don't go to games. I haven't been to a game in a long time, and I really don't like going to games at this point. So I'm 41. Drew's 10 years younger than me, almost, right? 8 years younger than me?
Yeah, 33.
Yeah.
Eight years.
Yeah. So I've gone to more games than I can remember at this point. It's just, to me, a more enjoyable experience to be at home or at a bar where I have a little bit more control over when I can get a drink, when I can go to the bathroom, whom around, all those things. So anyway, I'm going to be watching these games with a friend and, you know, just in a comfortable setting where I have access to as many drinks as I want and whatever. I have a ritual. We have rituals around the game. And if you are tuning in, I'm going to encourage you to abide by my rules of how I go about the game. So, you know, to start the game, we got shots and we have drinks at certain points. We have drinks to turn the tide. If we fall behind, we're going to do something to change the vibe. So part of what watching us is going to be, or, you know, and I say watching, it kind of scared me for a second because we've never been a visual podcast, but, you know, we're going to have to put our makeup on and shit.
You're going to have to look at my ugly yeah, fucking face for
right,
4 hours on
but
Sunday.
Listen, I'm very, very superstitious. You know, I have an entire account dedicated to the color pants that we wear. So obviously the intangibles are important to me. And I feel like, you know, this season, if people tune in and they follow along with whatever I'm doing, whatever, you know, change of pace we come up with, whatever rules we have around at the start of a half, you have to take a shot. At the end of a game for a win, you got to do this, whatever. I think that could be pretty fun. So, but we may end up getting canceled because I'm like encouraging binge drinking, but, you know, I haven't been told there's anything off limits yet. So at this point,
if you want to be, you know, I have my little halftime drink sponsor, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Fake sponsor,
exactly.
That I've been doing,
yeah.
So
from now on, that tweet is not going to be it's not going to be written down. You're going to record that shit. It's just going to be a screen record of the live stream.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. But yeah, anybody wants to send me free bourbon, I'll be happy to tell people that
exactly,
you have the greatest bourbon ever made. It's got to be over 101 proof, though. That's my only it's my only rule.
What if they send it to you with 99 proof? You won't take it?
I'll be kind of pissed off. That there will be comments made about that. So,
yeah. All right. So basically,
kill my liver.
We're going to give you more information. We're going to give you, and that'll be found on Twitter, as to how to download and if there's a specific link you should use to download. All those things, but Drew and I are going to be live streaming for 8 to 9 games this year, and I think once a week we're going to do a live show, and it's always going to be immediately before we record the podcast, so it's going to be a pregame to the podcast, so it's going to be sort of a brainstorming session with people who listen. So you know, I think it's going to be pretty cool, pretty fun season, and hopefully people who listen are excited about it too, because we are.
Yeah, very excited, and should be a good opportunity to, you know, for our fans. I don't particularly care about how many followers our podcast has or whatever. I just hope that, you know, people who listen enjoy it. So just giving them more access and more ability to, you know, interact and be part of it will always be fun.
Yeah, I honestly don't care if it's the same, you know, X amount of people at the beginning of the season and the end of the season. I don't really care as long as people are enjoying it, but it would be awesome, right, if people started to catch on and more people added on, because I think it's just like what we do, I think, is conducive to just a group
normal
of people. Enjoying. Right.
Yeah.
I think most Ravens fans who don't listen to this podcast either have never heard of it for whatever reason, or they don't like us and they don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, I've probably given them some reasons, but yeah. You know,
well, but their reason is that, you know, like,
true with me,
right? But like, yeah, no shit. That's who you are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mean to everybody, so it's not really.
Yeah, yeah, that's not personal.
You're not special.
No, exactly. Right.
Just no.
Yeah. So, I think it can be, this can be a pretty fun change, you know, new addition to things. But it has no
yeah,
change.
Yeah, because we had
nothing's going to change about the podcast. The podcast is only going to get better.
You and I had actually talked about doing, you know, like YouTube arguments or Twitter spaces or whatever to kind of get that live thing. And we were like, we don't want to fuck with what we have on Zone 32. So this is a good addition. And, you know, they've given us a good platform to do it on. So I'm
right.
excited.
And FYI, it's going to be, I mean, I'm sure you can find it by searching. Me and Drew both have the exact same handles on the app as we have on Twitter. But the show is going to be called Zone 32. So this is not like me and Drew going rogue and doing our own thing. This is truly just a Zone 32, you know, like variant.
Yeah, this is more of a Jake is a weirdo and lives in California. And, you know, Grant might actually be playing on Sundays. So we didn't really want to commit him to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Be awkward for Grant to get a contract offer.
Well, and,
at the end
yeah,
of,
and to be clear, too, I think we're going to be able to have guests too, so you know we're gonna be working on that, and I don't think we're gonna have people who commit to watching an entire game with us. I don't think anybody wants to do that.
Manning cast style, where we bring somebody in for a quarter or whatever.
Exactly right. So yeah, no, I
JK
think
Dobbins, JK Dobbins, you can join us for a quarter.
Yeah, when he gets cut.
Yeah,
James Prochet is gonna be the third chair.
That would be interesting. That would be compelling live stream audio.
We're heading it over to channel 3.
Yeah. Oh God, that would be well. And then he's channel 3, and we're zone 32, so we can get a nice little like crossover graphics going there.
Yeah exactly. Right.
Yeah. So this will be fun. This will be good for everybody. We're not going anywhere here. Just to reiterate that, like,
no,
this is not going to change at all.
Getting bigger.
If anything, it'll just improve the podcast here. So,
there you have it.
Getting bigger, getting bigger like a blogger from Annapolis and a small gathering in April.
Yeah. And just to add to the joke, I'm not going to be able to hide the Boston accent for fucking full live stream. So Will has brutally bullied me into using my non-regional diction for this podcast because he said that, you know, you Baltimore people would find me weird if I talked the way that I actually do. There's no, I'm turning that off. That's not happening for the live stream. So
me and Lacey will bully you and get you off the internet.
Sound like a whole fucking different person. I heard it in a couple words there, and like, yeah, fuck it, I'll just let it fly. Doesn't matter. All right,
there you have it. Hey, then got to build up to it real quick. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week to discuss this, that, and the other. We'll find out if Grant makes a 53-man roster. But meanwhile, it's time for me to die.
Oh! Oh, that was a good one.
That was the best one we've had in months.
Yeah, that was good.
Zone 32.